of Yud, and really we're still continuing the series of the identical question, in which we're trying to find, as we've identified an inconsistency in the views of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and because of this, Rav Yochanan wanted to suggest that we reverse their positions, and the Gemara keeps on saying we don't need to do that because the cases are distinguishable. We will eventually wind up with an irreconcilable contradiction, but we're not quite there yet. And that is, I think, where the wide line on Daf Yud, Ela I Kasha, if there is a question, Ha Kasha, the following is the question. And this is all taken from a Mishnah further on. Beis Shammai Omrim, Beis Shammai says, Ein Nosnin Es Ha'or Lifnei Hador Son, V'lo Yag Bihenu, Ela Im Kain, Yesh Olav Kezayis Basar. Now this raises an interesting question. On Yom Tov, you're allowed to slaughter animals because you're allowed to do malachos for food preparation. Now, by definition, if you're allowed to slaughter an animal, you're allowed to skin an animal. Right, no question, because how are you going to get the meat unless you remove the hide? But, interestingly enough, once you remove the hide, hide itself is a mukta object on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And the reason is because unprocessed hide, the skin. Unprocessed hide is not suitable for a garment, and you're not allowed to process it because ibud, or la'abed et ha'or, is something that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the question, therefore, what Beis Shammai says is the following. You cannot take hide and put it on your doorway so people will trample it, because that's a way of processing it, soften it up. V'lo yag bihenu. And you're not even allowed to lift it, meaning to say you skin it and it drops and you got to let it stay there. You cannot even move it out of the room that you skinned the animal. You cannot lift up hide. Ela im kain, yesh olav kezayis basar. If there's a little flesh that is still, even an olive-sized piece of flesh, that is still attached to the hide, so in effect you can drag the hide because it becomes what is called a handle to the flesh that you're allowed to move. In other words, Beis Shammai essentially says, hide, once it is disattached from the animal, cannot be moved on Yom Tov because it's mukta. Beis Hillel, however, matirin. And the reason this is so is Beis Hillel says, if you're going to tell a person that he's going to be stuck with this big animal hide in the middle of his living room or whatever it is, he will be reluctant to even shecht on Yom Tov, and he will desist from activities that would bring joy on Yom Tov. And therefore, in order to enhance the joy of Yom Tov and encourage him to shecht, Beis Hillel permits him to move the hide. Not process the hide, but to move the hide. So again, from this Mishnah, what do we see? That Beis Hillel permits that which would normally be forbidden in the greater interests of enhancing the joy of a festival. Beis Shammai says no. Beis Shammai does not use, right, this is the same type of question we've had many times, Beis Shammai does not use Simchas Yom Tov as a basis of leniency. Alma, we see from this text, Gabe Simchas Yom Tov, when it comes to the rejoicing of the festival, Beis Shammai L'chumra, Beis Shammai is strict and does not give us a dispensation to permit the moving of the hide. Ubeis Hillel L'kula, Beis Hillel is lenient. Varminhi, a question was raised from the case of Kisa. Now again, the Gemara doesn't even say it as v'chulu, etc., because this is the same question. But again, remember the question of Kisoi, that according to Beis Shammai, I'm not allowed to shecht a chaya or an oaf on Yom Tov, even if my shovel was already stuck into the dirt before Yom Tov, unless it was already disattached, because Beis Shammai is concerned with the prohibition of mukta, of moving dirt on Yom Tov. In other words, Beis Shammai, I'm sorry. Beis Shammai was lenient. Beis Shammai says, if I already had a shovel that was stuck into the dirt, I'm allowed to shecht and do kisoy because of Simchas Yom Tov. Beis Hillel says you're not allowed to do it. Which means, what's the contradiction? That Beis Shammai uses Simchas Yom Tov to be mutter, and Beis Hillel forbids it. So that's a contradiction to their position about the hide. About the hide. So the Gemara's answer... So on this, once again, we want to bring in Rabbi Yochanan's answer. And Rabbi Yochanan's answer is, Muchlefet Hashita. Perhaps we could switch around, this is in the first Mishnah, we could switch it around where Beis Shammai is the one that is strict and Beis Hillel is the one that is lenient, and that will match up with their positions by the hide. But the Gemara once again says, no connection, mimai. For what reason do you have to say Muchlefes Hashita? Dilma lohi, perhaps there is no need to reverse opinions. Ad kan lo ka'amri Beis Shammai hasam. Again, the same idea, that the reason Beis Shammai permits kisoy is not because he generically invokes Simchas Yom Tov as a leniency, but rather Beis Shammai holds that the fact that you stuck the shovel in the dirt means you pre-designated it. And Beis Shammai says it's not muktzah. Masha enkein hide, which is not usable at all, that would be mukta. Elahecha deika deker no, it's when there's a stuck shovel in the dirt. Of elahecha deika deker no, it's low. So the fact that Beis Shammai is strict by the hide, he could still be lenient by the dirt. Now what about Beis Hillel? Beis Hillel is lenient by the dirt. I'm sorry, Beis Hillel is strict by the dirt. Why is he lenient by the height? So we say the following: Inami atkan lekamri Beis Hillel hacha alechazki lemizka aloya. Beis Hillel might disagree with the whole premise that height is mukta. The reason why height is mukta, Beis Shammai would say, is because height that's unprocessed is not suitable for a garment. But that doesn't mean it's useless. You can spread it on the floor like a mat. Right? There are people who take just skins and they just sit on it. And therefore, it's not that Beis Hillel takes off the prohibition of mukta because of Simchas Yom Tov, but he does not consider the hide to be mukta at all, because chazi means it is suitable, lamizka, to recline iluya on it. Avol Hasan, but by the dirt, lo, he holds dirt as muktzah, unless it was detached from the ground, and therefore he is strict. So once again, there is no particular contradiction. So the Gemara tries once again. See, again, the issue here is, we know that Rav Yochanan said, because of a certain contradiction, we have to reverse Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel's position by Kisei Hadam. And we've identified many, many potential contradictions. But we've shown over and over again that it's not a contradiction that would compel reversal. So Rav Yochanan's statement has no reference yet. So now we try once again. And actually each of these Mishnayos illustrates important principles. Ele'i kasha ha-kasha. If there is a question, the following is the question. Beis Shammai omrim, ein mesalkin es hatarisin biyom tov, Ubeis Hillel Matirin Af Lahachzer. Okay, what are terisin? Terisin are shutters.
Trisim.
It's not exactly the modern, but similar to that. And this refers to the following. You had storekeepers in those days, even today the same thing, where they had movable cabinets which contained their merchandise. And when it was a market day, they would kind of wheel them out. And they would open up the cabinet, and people would buy merchandise. And then when they would close their store, they would close it up. Now, this movable cabinet had a door, a shutter, that was called a teris. And it was not on a hinge. Unlike a door today, it was something you simply pulled out or stuck in with a bolt or the like. Now, on Yom Tov, the halach, although we don't do this today, other restaurants sometimes do it. On Yom Tov, you are allowed to have your store open to sell people food, although they can't handle money, so it would have to be on credit and the like. But once again, if people need to get food on Yom Tov, then a store would be allowed to provide food. Now the question is this, though. If your store is open on Yom Tov, are you allowed to remove the terisin or put them back? Now what potentially is the issue here? Here is the issue. When you remove part of something that is connected to a structure, you are committing a malacha called soser, demolishing. And when you put the door back, you might be doing what is called building. Now, opening and closing a door on a hinge, right? No one's going to say, hey, I'm not allowed to open a door because I'm demolishing a building, because it remains attached. As long as it's attached to the building, that's not called demolishing. But if you take something away, you take a shutter and you pull it out, that might be called demolishing. And when you put the shutter in, that might be called building. So Beis Shammai says the following rule. Yes, Jew. Yeah, we were talking about a Jewish person.
So a Jew can walk in a store in Yom Tov?
No, well, no, no. I mean, in order to be a Yom Tov store, no money could be handled.
Yeah, but it's so, still selling the thing.
Well, it's legitimate because he is helping. In other words, assuming he's selling, assuming you're limiting your work to things that people need for Yom Tov. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't sell cars on Yom Tov, you know. But if you're selling food, then that would be permitted, food that people will make on Yom Tov.
Can he benefit from the money?
Well, no money is paid. Can he get paid for it?
Yeah.
Well, in order to get paid for anything you do on Shabbos and Yom Tov, even for babysitting, right, you have to get paid for services that you render before or after, even if it's only, for example, if you get a weekly salary, so then you can get paid even though you worked on Yom Tov, because you're getting paid really for the whole week. But if on the other hand you're getting, and so if I'm a babysitter, for example, I have to get paid for some service, even 5 minutes that I did before or after. I cannot just get paid for Shabbos or Yom Tov.
But this is not a service. This is actually a product. So.
That's a product. Anyway, yeah, no, but he's talking about salaries. Right. In other words, okay, if I'm a worker in the store, can I get paid for the time I put in on Shabbos?
But for the shopkeeper who's essentially working and he's deriving an income from the sales of his.
That actually wouldn't be a problem because he's not getting paid for his labor, he's getting paid for his product. So the problem would not be the shopkeeper. The problem would be the laborers who are providing services because they're getting paid for the labor of their activity on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But as I say, if the money could be allocated to pre or post, like it's a weekly basis, that's called havla'a, and that's permitted. In fact, same thing with the Baal Kore. Even so, if I'm a Baal Kore, I read the Torah on Shabbos, and I get paid for it. Basically, I have to essentially charge them for my preparation time. In other words, you're agreeing to pay me for my preparation time. Of course, that's not totally true. If I prepare and don't show up on Shabbos, I'm not going to get paid. You know, you can make conditions like that, but nevertheless, it has to be allocable to a pre-Shabbos or a post-Shabbos activity. Now, so this is what Beis Shammai says. Beis Shammai says here, you cannot even remove terisin on Yom Tov. And that is because removing a teris is demolishing the cabinet. It's a form of demolishing, of partial demolition. And Beis Shammai says this is an isser called soser. Now, so according to Beis Shammai, what does that mean? If I want to operate my store on Yom Tov, I have to remove the door to the cabinet before Yom Tov. Now, maybe I'll find another safe place to wheel it, whatever it is, but I cannot remove the door on Yom Tov. By the way, and implicit in that is, I can't put the door back either, because if removal of the door is demolition, putting the door on would be bona. And let me just explain the chiddush here. The chiddush here is this, though. The chiddush is that even though this is a movable cabinet, because the malacha of bona and soser normally refers to things that are connected to the ground. But this is what is called a kli, a movable utensil. And Beis Shammai says the molacha of bona and soser do not only apply to buildings that are connected to the ground, it also applies to movable utensils. That's Beis Shammai's view.
Well, Beis Shammai would then have to hold that for soda bottles.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it would be a whole range of things.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Now, Beis Hillel matirin. Beis Hillel permits not only the removal of a tris in order to facilitate the yomtiv sale, but Beis Hillel permits af lahachzir. After I remove it and I sell my goods, I can then put it back. Now, the Gemara's Hava Amina is that Beis Hillel permits this in the long-term interest or the greater interest of Simchas Yom Tov. Because if you tell the storekeeper, same business, that you can't remove your door on Yom Tov and you have to do it beforehand, he might not want to open his store at all because of a security risk. And if you tell him once you remove it, you can't put it back, he also wouldn't want to open it up because, in other words, whatever number of sales he's going to make on Yom Tov, he's afraid he'll lose more by the risks of not having security. So the Hava Mina is, once again, Beis Hillel is permitting that which would normally be forbidden because of Simchas Yom Tov. This is the Hava Amina. So again, we ask our Kasha, Alma, we see from here, Gabe Simchas Yom Tov, Beis Shammai L'chumra, Beis Shammai is strict, Ubeis Hillel L'kula, Varminhi, a question was raised, Hashochet Chayav Yov B'Yom Tov, right, the case of Kisoy, right, the case of Kisoy, where Beis Shammai allows you to dig the dirt, and Beis Hillel does not. So here the Gemara says the following, Bishlama Beis Shammai Beis Shammai Lo Kasha. We acknowledge that in Beis Shammai there's no contradiction because it's really apples and oranges. Because the problem with the tris is the molacha of building and demolishing. So Beis Shammai says that's a molacha. We're not going to allow Simchas Yom Tov to permit you to do a forbidden molacha. With the dirt, we've said many, many times, it's not a problem because since you stuck the shovel in beforehand, Beis Shammai says that is sufficient to pre-designate the dirt. So in Beis Shammai, there's no problem. Hasam ika dekar notes, there's a shovel that is stuck in the dirt. Hacha leka dekar notes, here you don't have that. Ella, and here we've hit pay gold, or pay dirt. Beis Hillel, Beis Hillel kasha. But in Beis Hillel, there's no answer to this. Because again, if Beis Hillel says, even a rabbinic law of mukta, which is a matter of moving dirt, is not going to be violatable in order to enhance the shechita of a bird for Simchas Yom Tov, then how could he possibly permit the removal or the returning of a tris, which involves a forbidden malacha of binyan or stira? And on this, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Muchlefes Hashita. Ah, although now the Gemara is going to say, even this we don't need him for it. But on this we say, okay, you're right. Ultimately, Beis Hillel is saying, for Simchas Yom Tov, if we set aside a prohibition. And he ought to say the same thing by the Kisoy Hadam, and he will. And reverse the first Mishnah. Instead of Beis Shammai saying, you can shecht if the shovel was inserted, it'll be Beis Hillel that says you can shecht when the shovel was inserted.
Wow.
And therefore, we have found a home for Rav Yochanan's statements of Muchlefes Hashita. But now the Gemara says, okay. In other words, the Gemara seems to say that this is correct. This is what Rav Yochanan was referring to. So we're not challenging Rav Yochanan, but we're just saying that there is another answer to the question, though. And that is, what's the gears of the box? Gears, yeah. Ad kan, like Amri Beis Hillel Hacha, Elamishum, the ain binyan bekalim, the ain stira bekalim. There's actually a much more simpler answer to Beis Hillel, that the reason Beis Hillel permits you to take off the door and put back the door is not because Simchas Yom Tov overrides a prohibition, but rather Beis Hillel maintains, and we pass in this way actually, that the malacha called Bone and Soser only applies to things that are connected to the karka, and it does not apply to movable entities. Because again, the concept of the term building and demolishing is a term that is connected with improvements to real estate. And therefore, Beis Hillel says, there's no problem in taking off the door, putting on a door, because we're dealing with a movable cabinet. Now, ein achinami. If, for example, I would put on a door on a hinge to this building, that would, of course, be forbidden. But when it's a movable cabinet, Beis Hillel holds ein binyan ustira bekalim. That's what a kalim is. Therefore, according to that, it's no contradiction at all. It's not that Beis Hillel allows Simchas Yom Tov to permit prohibitions. He rather says there is no prohibition that you're doing when you remove or put on a door to a movable cabinet, because ein binyan ustira bekalim. Therefore, there is no need, the Gemara says, to reverse. And therefore, although Rav Yochanan made his statement, but what the Gemara is saying is there is no proof to Rav Yochanan's contention. Okay, now, in a sense, this Amud is a very good advanced preparation, because really every single case that it's cited is a Mishnah further on. So this introduces us to all of the Mishnayos, not all, but many of the Mishnayos that we're going to have. So now let's go to another Mishnah, and that is Beis Shammai Omrim. The Gemara quoted this before. We learned it last week. Beis Shammai Omrim, lo yitol ela im kain nineya mibod yom, ubeis hillel omrim omeid viomer ze veze ani naitel. So we're going back to our dovecot. Remember, the preceding Mishnah discussed moving the ladder from one dovecot to another dovecot. Ultimately, why do I have my ladder by the dovecot? Because I want to get birds that I could slaughter for Yom Tov. So according to Beis Shammai, he's very strict. Beis Shammai says, you cannot take non-domesticated birds. It's not like a chicken coop. You cannot go up and get those doves unless before Yom Tov, you actually picked up the doves that you want to slaughter, and you shook them. Again, shaking is lavdafka, but it means you actually physically designated them. If all you said was, I want A, B, and C, verbally, a verbal designation is insufficient. In order to use them for Yom Tov, you have to have physically appropriated them, and then you can put them back. So Beis Shammai is strict. Beis Shammai says, lo yito, you cannot take the doves, ela on Yom Tov, that is, to shecht, ela im kain, unless nineya, you picked them up, mi ba'od yom, before, while it was still day, that meaning before Yom Tov.
That's not the general rule on designation, though, is it?
Well, this is Beis Shammai's general rule. That's Beis Shammai's rule. Now, right. now
we don't, he would apply that to all.
Well, we'll see in the Gemara that there might be something special about these birds. Beis Hillel Omrim, and of course we follow Beis Hillel. Omeid, I can stand on the ground before Yom Tov, that is, v'omer, and I can declare, zeh v'zeh ani notel. Right, I'm standing on the ground, the dovecot is 20 feet high, and I can say, of course, We'll discuss how does he know that he's taking the right ones. We'll discuss that. The one thing you do see from the Mishnah, though, and this is an interesting point, and that is, without some type of designation, you would not be allowed to take any of these birds. The birds must be pre-designated. The machlokes, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, is how do you pre-designate the birds? Do you have to physically hold them, or can you verbally designate them? But everybody is moda you have to have designation. Okay, we'll see why. And this is an example, of course, where Beis Shammai is machmir, the typical example, and Beis Hillel is lenient. Okay, so now the Gemara explains the following. Amar Rav Chanan Bar Ami. Rav Chanan Bar Ami says, Machlokes, the Machlokes is Bibrecha Rishaina. The Beis Shammai Savri, Gazrinan, Dilma, Asi, Liam Lucha. Let me explain this a little. Doves mate several times a year, and therefore they have litters more than once a year. A litter is called brecha, the first spring, so to speak. Now, the minog was many people often would not take the first litter because if the dove is deprived of all of its children, the dove gets lonely, so to speak. And therefore, they would leave the brecha rishona and they would only take subsequent litters. So the Gemara says the following. The machlokes in the Mishnah between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is referring to a case where this is the first litter of the year. And Beis Shammai therefore says you need a real hachana of picking it up, because if all you did was verbally designate it, we are afraid you will change your mind later, since many people like to leave the brecha rishona with the mother. Now, what does this mean? So let's say you do change your mind. I mean, what sin would it be if you decide not to take it? I mean, what does that mean? So here is the problem that apparently we envision. The way Rashi explains is the following. Let's assume all I did was, like Beis Hillel, I pre-designated it from 20 feet down. The next day I climb the ladder and I bring the birds down to Shecht. The chashash that Beis Shammai has is, I might change my mind and be filled with compassion in the last minute after I brought the bird down on Yom Tov by thinking, you know, I don't want to leave mom without kids, maybe I'll bring it back up. So what's going to be wrong with that? What's going to be wrong with that is that you essentially were moving animals for a non-Yom Tov use. If you move an animal to Shech and then you decide not to use it, in effect you were handling Balei Chayim on Yom Tov, not for Ochel Nefesh, and that's a prohibited movement of Muktzah. Therefore, Beis Shammai says, the only way that we can be confident that you really want to shech these birds is before Yom Tov you went to the trouble of actually physically holding them. That shows a certain firmness in your commitment to shecht. And then Beis Shammai says, you can go ahead and bring them down. And we're not now you might change your mind, you might and you could change your mind, but you're allowed to take them down because we are permitted to make the assumption you will not change your mind. And Beis Hillel says we're not afraid of that. But what is the Gemara saying? And this answers your question. If it's already the second litter and beyond, since people routinely shecht it and don't really think twice about that, even Beis Shammai would admit that verbal designation is sufficient. Now, this really supports what you said, that Beis Shammai does admit that the general idea of pre-designation can be effected verbally, but this is a special concern for the Brecha Rishona, because we are afraid you might change your mind after you take the birds down. Right, so that's what he says. That Amar of Chanan Bar Ami, Machlokes, the Machlokes here is Bebrecha Rishona, with the first litter. The Beis Shammai Savri, Beis Shammai says you need actual physical designation, because otherwise, Gazrinan, otherwise we decree, Dilma, lest Asiliam Lucha, you might change your mind. Meaning, you might change your mind on Yom Tov after you brought the birds down, and then you're transgressing the Isser of moving animals that you're not going to use for food consumption. Beis Hillel Savri, look at Beis Hillel, says we're not afraid of that. Aval, Bibrecha Rishniyah, But once we are dealing with the second litter, Divrei HaKol, everybody would say, not only Beis Hillel, but also Beis Shammai, Be Omeid V'Omer Zeh V'Zeh Ani Noitel, by saying this and that I will take, in other words, even if you didn't physically designate it, it would be Sagya. Okay. It would be sufficient. Okay, that's fine. But now the Gemara is asking the following. All right, so what we're saying is, if you set aside the idea of Brecha Rishona, which has unique concerns, everybody says, how do you pre-designate birds? By simply pointing out, verbally, the specific ones you want to take. But that much you have to do. The Gemara is now going to ask, wait a second. You don't even need that much. Let's assume there's a group of 20 birds. The Mishnah implies that both, according to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, at a minimum, you got to designate the specific birds you're going to take. But the Gemara is going to ask, that's not true. In reality, all I have to say is, I plan to take from this group. And I don't have to say which ones. So even Beis Hillel's designation is more specific than it has to be. Right, so that's the Gemara's next kasha. U Beis Hillel, according to Beis Hillel, Lama li lameimar, why do you have to say, Zeh v'zeh ani notel, this, and this is before Yom Tov, this and that, I'm going to take Lema, just say Mikan ani notel lemachor. I will be taking from this group tomorrow. Now, this gets us involved actually in a very, very, you'll see in a moment, an enormously complicated sugya, one of the most difficult sugyas in Shas. And this introduces a concept called Bereira. Bereira is a retrospective designation, meaning this deals with the question, can you designate something now, as of now, whose identity will not be specifically determined until later, but when it is specifically determined as of later, it is considered to be the one that you designated from before. So, for example, can a person say, let's say in Muktzah, I hereby designate now, before Yom Tov, because all designation has to be before Yom Tov, that I will, the one that I take from this group tomorrow. Now, if I say there is a concept of retrospective designation, then in effect, I can designate now the unknowable item that I will decide to use later. So the Gemara wants to say, Beis Hillel should allow that. Now, maybe you'll suggest, no. Maybe you'll suggest, Beis Hillel would not agree because Beis Hillel does not subscribe to the principle of Breira, of retrospective.
Does Breira allow you to make, but you're making essentially two decisions, though, with this kind of, it's not an external event, it's a designation now of something you're going to designate.
That's correct. But Bereira can also connect to your own mental processes. If I hold Yesh Bereira, that means I hereby designate now whichever one, which is presently unknowable even to me, but I am designating the one, just like I could say, I am designated the one that you will choose. I could say I'm designating the one that I will choose.
You can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Right? Now, again, you have to do that before Yom Tov. But if I hold Yesh Breira, the actual designation could occur on Yom Tov. Now, if I hold Yesh Breira, therefore, the Gemara is asking, why would Beis Hillel say, you got to say before Yom Tov, Zeh V'Zeh, just say, I am taking from this group that which will be designated tomorrow. So maybe you'll suggest that wouldn't work because Beis Hillel does not allow that retrospective clarification. So now we have a very interesting example of Breira in a context very far removed from Yom Tov, and that is the laws of Muktzah. Let me just explain this a little outside. We know, I'm sorry, the laws of Tumas Meis. We know that a dead body conveys Tumah not only if you touch it or you carry it, but a dead body conveys Tumah if you're under the same roof. And that's called Tumas Ohel, that is the Tumah of being under the same roof, the same Ohel, the same tent. Now, the rules about being under the same roof are not really based on roof. It really means being in the same room. For example, if the mace is in this room and I'm in that room and the door is not open, the halacha is that I'm tohar. Right? You know, the rooms have to be open to each other. However, the halacha is the following. Rabbinically, and this is a rabbinic rule, any doorway through which the mace is going to be carried is treated as if it is already an open doorway. So, let's assume there's a dead body in this room. And let's assume for a moment there is only one doorway out. Let's assume you didn't have these three doors. The only door you had was that. Then any person and anything that is standing in that other room would be tameh, even if they leave the building before the mace actually gets there. Because the way it works is, in a rabbinic way, this is called sof tuma latseis. Since the tuma will eventually enter that room, in some ways it is treated rabbinically as if it's already there, even though the door is closed. Now, that would be very simple to apply if there would be only one door. So if it's only one door, I know the mace is going that way, so I treat it as if, okay, this is machlok, is exactly what the process is. Is the process that I treat it as if the mace is already there, or is the process I treat it as if the door is already open? See, because practically there are two different mechanisms. If the door would be open, there would be tumah automatically. So is sof tumah latseis kind of breaking down the door, or is it actually considered to be kind of a transportation of the mace into that room? It seems more logical that it actually just means that any door that's about to be opened, the door is treated as opened. Okay. Now, the Mishnah here discusses the following question, however. What if the mace is in a room that has several doors to several different rooms? And the mace could be carried out in different ways. And there are people in room 1, room 2, room 3, room 4. Which room do I say sof tuma latseis for the tuma? Right, that's the question. So, Vatanan, the Mishnah says, Hameis babayis, if a mace is in a house, actually house often means a room, velo pesachim harbe, and that room has many doors to different rooms. So here it actually says, kulan tameim. At that point, now again, let me just explain that this is a situation where the mace could be, now this would not always be the case. For example, if some of your rooms, some of your doors open up into interior rooms like bedrooms, I wouldn't say sof tuma latseis, because that is not the direction in which the mace would be carried out, right? So that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a situation, let's say the mace is in the innermost room, and let's say that there are doors outside through any number of several directions, so the mace potentially could be carried out into any of those areas, and even though only one of them is going to be chosen. So in such a situation, at that particular stage, kulan tameim, everything is tamei because of sof tuma latseis, right? That's the principle, that the direction that tuma will eventually go is considered to, as if the door is open and the tuma therefore spreads. Now, then the Mishnah says the following. Nifta, let's just how Rashi learns here. Now that means even if you choose a door later, let's just see how that works. Okay, I'll come back and explain this in a moment. Now then it says, Niftach Echad Mehem, when one of the doors is finally opened, in other words, at the point that the mace dies, all the rooms are tame. But eventually the mace is carried out through one of the doors. So what is the impact of carrying out the mace through one of the doors? So here it says, Hu tame, only that entranceway is tame. Vakulan tahorim, and everyone else, everything else, is tame. Now, Aztar. Now, 1 second. Let's just try to interpret this here.
So it's like a changing of the mind, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but here's the question. The question is, you're telling me initially when the guy died, all of the rooms are tame. And then when a choice is made, only one is tame and the other is tor. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that the stuff that was tame gets to become tahor? So Rashi explains that's not what it means. Rashi explains the following. It is only prospective. It is not retrospective. You see how this is connected to Breira. Meaning to say the following. The mace dies. The moment the mace dies, all 10 doorways are potential avenues of exit. And because all 10 doorways are potential avenues of exit, all the utensils that are in those 10 rooms are tummy. And that is not going to change even when we take the mace out to a specific doorway, because those utensils were in the rooms at the time when they were potentially the exit of the mace. Now, what it says, however, is the following. Once we decide to take the mace that way, from now on, the other rooms are no longer considered to be open to the Tumah. So if somebody were to bring something in then it would not be Tamei. You see? In other words, this does not mean the things that were there before become Tohar. They are Tamei. But it does mean any new things you bring in are not going to become Tamei. Because from the moment that the mace, that you've chosen your door, the other rooms are no longer considered to be open to the Tumah. Right? I mean, that's a simple thing. In other words, it's like opening and closing a door. In a sense, Sof Tumah Latzeis meant the doors were open, halachically, and once you decided to use that door, those other doors got closed. Now, if a door gets closed, that doesn't mean the things that are already were Tumah are going to become Tohar, but it does mean any new things that are brought in are not going to become Tumah. Okay, so that's fine. That's what that says. Now, what about this? Chashav lahotziyo biachad mehim. See, niftach means you've actually opened the door to carry out the mace. But what if you have not yet opened the door of exit, but you simply have decided, chashav, I've made a decision, I'm going to use that door. Oh, either through a door, in other words, it basically says a mace could be carried out of a building in two ways, respectful ways. One respectful way is through a doorway, which is the normal way, but the other is even a window could be treated as a way of exit if the window has a minimum width of 4 tefachs wide by 4 tefachs of height. A tefach is a fist, so it's around 16 inches by 16 inches would be an acceptable way of being motzi, a mace. So that wouldn't be with a coffin usually, unless it's a child, but you know, a body could be taken out that way. So what if you just had machshava, but you didn't do a maisa yet? So here it says, matzeles, it will save, it will, in other words, take away tuma, I'll call hapsachim kulan, on all the other doorways. In other words, the Tanakhama basically says that as soon as you have decided your doorway, even if you haven't yet utilized it, that will be sufficient to remove the Tumah from all the other rooms. Not retroactively, at least, but at least from the time that you had that machshava. Now, we then have a machlokes beis Shammai and beis Hillel What type of machshava will be matzil? Matzil is will save the other rooms from tuma. Beishamay omrim, v'hu shechashav lahotzio ad shlo yamus hames. You must have designated your doorway before the person died. In other words,
chashav is not.
Chashav
is just
thinking.
A process, a cognitive process.
Yes.
But not a decision yet.
No. You've made a decision. In other words, chashav latzi, meaning you have made a decision that you will use a certain door. In other words, I mean, in most cases, this would actually. It would be a very non-conscious decision. I mean, normally, but you're thinking if a person dies, that's the door that we use.
What happens if you change your mind?
Well, you can change your mind later, but in order to spare the other psachim from tuma,
right.
The machshava had to be to use this one before the person died. Okay. Meaning, according to Beit Shammai, what is
before he dies?
Yes, according to Beit Shammai, here is the thing: if you have not designated a particular doorway before the person died. Okay? Then according to Beit Shammai, as soon as the person dies, all the rooms are potential avenues. And if all of the rooms are potential avenues, they all remain tamei until such time as you actually take them out that particular way. In other words, like this. Keep in mind that the Mishnah lays down the rule. Right? The Mishnah laid down the rule that as soon as the person dies, all the potential exits are tameh. In order to negate that application, Beit Shammai says you must have had a specific machshava to use one of them before the person died. Now that's what Beit Shammai says. Beis Hillel omrim, Beis Hillel says, af mishayamus hameis. You can make that designation even after the person dies. Well, the Gemara is comparing this to the subtleties of Breira, and that is the following. A person, obviously, the mace is only going to be carried through one doorway, right? But you don't know which doorway. So even if a person doesn't know, is it going to be this door or this door? Because let's assume there's logistical details. A person might say, according to Beis Hillel, I hereby designate as the door that which I will choose later after the person dies. And the choice of the door later is the one that is considered to be pre-designated from before.
That's Beis Shammai.
No, that's Beis Hillel. Look, see, Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says, see, that's the machlokas. Beis Shammai says...
Oh.
See, that's the argument here.
Oh, I see.
In other words, Beis Shammai says, in order to spare the other rooms from Tuma, you have to specifically designate which room you're going to carry, which door you're going to carry the mace before he dies. In other words, according to Beis Shammai, your failure to designate means all the rooms are Tumei. All the rooms. Beis Hillel says you can make the designation later because under the principle of Breira, you can actually pre-designate the indeterminate room that will not be chosen until later.
They agree, though, you have to make some decision before the mace.
Yes. But the decision of Beis Hillel is a virtually meaningless decision because the mace will obviously be carried out of some door. He's not going to be buried in the room. So if the only decision you have to make is I hereby designate as the Pesach now, whichever one I decide to bury the mace when he dies. So it's a pretty meaningless decision, but it has some great effect. And the effect of it is that all of the other rooms. Keep in mind the following: as a practical matter, at the moment of death, everything is tummy. But everything is tummy only because we're not, since you haven't yet made your decision, we don't know which one. But when you decide that this is the one, retroactively, see, this will mean that the stuff that we were thought was tummy will actually become tahor, because retroactively, it is treated as a pre-death designation of the door. So therefore, the Gemara is, this is kind of a very complicated din, but the Gemara proves from here that Beis Hillel subscribes to the concept of Breira. Retroactive designation of that which was indeterminate, unknown at the time. Therefore, the Gemara is comparing, if Breira helps to negate the problem of Sof Tuma Latzeis, then Breira should help for Muktzah as well. And why does Beis Hillel say in the Mishnah, in order for you to take the birds, you have to pre-designate them specifically? Mizeh u'mizeh. Why can't you just say, I hereby designate before Yom Tov whichever I choose to take tomorrow? So that's the question.
What you're saying is that you can make a decision to decide later.
That's correct. But what it's saying is, you can make a decision that what you decide later is the decision you're making now. It's not just, right? It's not just I make a decision now to decide later, but I make a decision now that what I decide later is my decision right now. Because otherwise it wouldn't help for Muktzah and it wouldn't help for Tumah. And therefore, you see the Gemara's contradiction here? So if Beis Hillel seems to say Breira works, then how come by Muktzah you have to say Zeh v'zeh ani notel? Why don't you just say, I am taking whatever I choose later?
Are they both Breira?
Well, there's a contradiction in Beis Hillel. In other words, Beis Hillel seems not to allow Breira by the birds, and he seems to allow Breira on the Tumah. So there's a contradiction here.
So by analogy, it's the same issue as the chicken and the egg, which comes first.
Well, the question basically is, can something have the status of a decision when it doesn't decide? That's really the question.
No, you decide not to decide now. That's a decision.
Yes, but is it a decision not to decide or a decision that decides? In other words, Breira is looking at the future.
But the
question becomes, in other words, it's actually a very profound semantic problem. That is, a decision to defer and decide later, can that be treated as something that is embraced, and can it be treated that the decision you made later was effectively the decision that you now made now in retrospect? I mean, that's the issue of Breira.
Rabbi? Yeah,
can a future decision be endowed with a present effect?
Is that you measure the outcome of effectiveness?
Well, okay. Yeah.
Rabbi? This is obviously talking about a person who we know is going to, God forbid, pass away. But what about a person who, you know, he's a chas v'chalila should happen. Person is like la 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 la, and all of a sudden, bang, he's gone.
You're right.
And you don't have a chance to make a decision.
You're right. Under those circumstances, even Beis Hillel would have to say all the doorways are tummy. That's correct.
This is talking about someone who's in a
someone
hospital
who is dying,
bed,
a hospital bed, someone who's dying, etc.
Mm-hmm. Is this similar to the annulment issue in a marriage? The question of, I mean, I'm way off base there, but the halakhic issue of whether you could, at the time of a marriage, make an agreement that retroactively it's annulled, and it's not generally accepted, right?
You can certainly, certainly annulments, the principle of annulment is actually a very well-accepted principle. The thing that's not accepted about it is the particular applications of annulment. For example, the Mishnah says if a man marries a woman on the condition that I'm a Kohen, and he's not a Kohen, she does not need a get, on the condition that I'm rich and he's poor, He does not need a get. The Gemara even discusses, what if it was on the condition that he's poor and he winds up to be rich? There's even so one man the Amrit says, well, she certainly doesn't mind that. Another says, you know, maybe, you know.
No, I was talking about in terms of a contractual, to avoid the Aguna problem, the contractual issue of if circumstances arise later.
Yeah, yeah. So that you can't do.
Is that a Brera type of?
It might be connected to Brera, that things that happen later may mean my decision now. We paskin, happens to be that we paskin for any Isser de Oraisa, we actually paskin Ein Brera.
Yeah.
The question would be, you're saying if I hold Yesh Brera, there might theoretically be some possibilities, but we do not paskin like that. See, that's the controversy of what's called the Rabbi Rachman based
on,
where Rabbi Rachman kind of says, if the woman would know she'd be married to a guy that didn't give her a get, she would never agree to marry the person, and therefore the marriage could be annulled retroactively. The problem is that that deals with an event that occurs later. That does not deal with a fraud at the inception of the wedding. That's exactly the problem.
But did he rely on Brera to come up with that?
He did not rely on Brera. Okay. He relied on a theory, which you know may or may not be true in any case, that any guy who behaves later had the seeds of that behavior at the time. There was part of an abusive personality.
Right.
Kind of the old idea that, you know, everything you do later in life was already, he always had it in him, so to speak. And in that sense, he used it for annulment. But, you know, we can't really look at that. I mean, you know, the part of the way you test the argument is that if this is an argument that says any time a husband refuses to give his wife a get, she doesn't need a get, then you've created a circumstance of a reducto ad absurdum where you never need a get.
Right.
And it's impossible to interpret the halacha in such a way that you never need a get. So any annulment that works 100% of the time, by definition, cannot be
valid. He couldn't rely on Brera for his din because it's deraisa.
Yeah, I think he'd be stuck there. You really cannot invoke Brera la halacha as a principle. But I think you are correct that theoretically, like that opinion, there would be some avenues there. So let's just see the Gemara's answer. So the Gemara's answer is, maybe you're misunderstanding. Amar Rabba, letaher es hapsachim mikanu lahaba. See, we misunderstood what Beis Hillel meant. Beis Hillel made a statement that says even a post-mortem designation of a doorway is effective. But we're not sure what that meant. What we thought that meant was a post-mortem designation of a doorway tied into Brera would retroactively mean all of the rooms are tohor. That means they never became tummy to begin with. That depends on Brera. But there's an alternative reading of Beis Hillel that is much more narrow. Beis Hillel indeed does not subscribe to retroactive clarification. And if there was no pre-designation of a particular doorway, all the rooms are tummy. But prospectively, if I choose the room later, then from that moment onward, new stuff that I bring in will not become tame. Meaning, Brera is implicated only if you're using the later decision and you're giving it a retroactive effect. But if you're simply saying, from now on, this is the way it is, that's perfectly fine, because obviously when you choose the doorway, it's going to be tar. Therefore, there's no contradiction. If Beis Hillel, in fact, rejects retroactive clarification, then by the Mukta, choosing your birds on Yom Tov is not going to help you, because you have to have pre-designation before Yom Tov. And Beis Hillel does not regard the indeterminacy of, I hereby designate that which I choose later, he does not regard that as effective. Right? So if you redefine what Beis Hillel means, then that's not going to be a problem. Okay. All right, maybe we'll stop here. Okay, have a good week, everybody.
This is quantum mechanics.
That's
right. Too bad you have
It's like springing uses.
Right. See, the scientist brings the physics in, and the lawyer brings in the property.
Yeah, well, you shine light on two slits, and you don't know which one
you don't
goes
know where it's at, right?
Yeah. Is it the particle?